I am Martha Brooke. I am our B2B CX roundtable host, and I've got Dave Seaton with me today as my interlocutor, and he's an expert in journey maps. And before we opened up the session, Dave and I were just saying it's kind of interesting. I'm an expert in customer surveys, especially for a B2B audience, and he's an expert in journey maps, especially for a B2B audience. And we kind of think of ourselves as sort of the left foot and the right foot, like you want a scientific approach to customer feedback and really good objective facts. And you also want a map of where you're going and how that aligns with your objectives. So we're kind of the hand in the glove, the left foot and the right foot. And together we make a great unity. Is that a fair way to describe us, Dave?
Absolutely, I think so. I was telling Martha before we opened the waiting room here that one of my clients is actually using their journey map to identify where they need to listen first, where to put in those touch point surveys, so they have the biggest impact on the customer experience.
And that they want to do them well. They don't want to do that silly thing where it's like, how likely are you to recommend based on some quick conversation you had with a customer service agent? Like, because that's usually you're not recommending based on that, right? So it sounded like they wanted to be smart, not just where to do it, but how to do it smartly. So, which I always appreciate. Okay, so our outline here is I've got just a few questions, 5, 7 questions, so we can kind of level set on what journey maps are. So I'll be asking Dave my questions, and then we're going to open this up kind of freewheeling style. Dave has an exercise. Everybody can be as involved as they want to be, can be, etc. So, Dave, let's start with the basics. What is a customer journey map, and why the heck would you make one?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's a important question because journey map means different things to different people. And if you go out on the internet, you may be surprised, but there is some bad advice out there on the internet. There is a one of the big CRM companies has a video that teaches you how to make a customer journey map in 1 hour. And other such misinformation out there. So, for the purposes of our discussion, we're going to define a customer journey map as a visualization of the experience.
Dynamic.
I mean, it sounds like it's
Oh, I think we got some
in-house
chatter there.
or
yeah, well, we're in this interview part. We want I would say
340.
we want you on mute, because otherwise it's a little chaotic to hear what Dave, our expert, has to say. So, yeah.
Right. I think we got it. So,
I
for
think
the
we're good.
purposes of our discussion, customer journey map is a visualization of the experience that a customer has as they interact with your company to accomplish their goal. And that customer goal is one of the most important parts of understanding the customer journey. So, in the customer journey mapping process, the process of creating the map, it's like getting a master's degree in your customers. And then you use the map to share and communicate those insights with the organization so that you can improve both the customer's experience and the business outcomes of the company. And so, why would you make a customer journey map? So that you can understand that series of interactions as the customer goes to accomplish their goal, in order that you can improve that experience and drive business outcomes for your company. Business outcomes examples are increasing revenue by getting more customers, increasing revenue by churning fewer customers, getting a bigger share of wallet from the customers that you have, enabling cross-sells to your existing customer base, reducing the cost to serve customers. All these are business outcomes that improve the profitability of our customers based on how we understand the customer journey and make improvements to that.
So is the visualization showing the point of interaction, but also the intent of the interaction?
Yes. So it is always from the customer's perspective, not the company's perspective. And we're understanding at the high level what is the customer's goal for going on this journey? What are they trying to accomplish? And then at each step along the way, they may have particular sub-goals. So an example I like to use is tax software. Right. If my goal is to pay my taxes and get the maximum refund that I can, I might have, if I'm evaluating different tax software vendors, I may have a sub-goal of finding a cost-effective vendor that's going to be easy to use and that I trust to get me the maximum refund. And then using the software, I may have a goal of filing my taxes quickly, but also being confident that I'm doing it right and I'm not going to get audited and I'm not going to leave money on the table.
Right. Okay. And what kind of things do you put on this journey map?
Well, I like to say that there are five things that should be on every journey map,
Okay.
but beyond that, and I'll tell you what those are in a second. Beyond that, you can put anything that you want on it to tell that customer's story in a way that's going to resonate with stakeholders in your company and drive the change. So the five things I say should be on every customer journey map. First is a customer persona. That is the type of customer that is going on this journey. And for a customer persona, it's different from a marketing persona that may be based on demographics like location and income level and that. This is a needs-based persona. So we look at, within our customer base, what are the common groupings of customers that have similar goals, needs, and values? So, for example, worked with a residential internet provider. We're all on Zoom. Many of us are working at home. We have high-speed internet in our homes. They found they had three different customer groups based on the customer goals. One of those was the work-from-home customer who absolutely needs reliable internet to support their livelihood, to make a paycheck. We interviewed customers who, if the internet went down, they got signed out of their virtual environment or the contact center phone system. They got clocked out. They weren't making money. They were risking disciplinary action for being logged out of their job. And so those customers needed a very reliable internet connection. Another customer segment was the fixed income group. Retirees, they're on a fixed income. Their number one need and goal, they were using the internet for streaming some shows and checking in on Facebook and sending some emails. Their goal was cost effectiveness. And so they're telling us very different things. You've got the work from homer over here that says, I don't know what it costs. I don't care what it costs. I just need it to work. And then you've got the customer persona over here saying, I am one bill increase away from canceling my service and just using my cell phone. So the first element is that customer persona that tells us who's going on the journey. Second element is what's the customer goals? What are they trying to accomplish by going on this journey? The third element is going to be the
Wait, can you say the
steps.
second one again? I'm taking notes, and we just had a really good question that I want you to address. But
The second one is the customer goal.
their goal. Okay, so we've got the persona, the goal, and then the question is, can we all see the chat? Was for B2B, is the persona a single individual or an organization? So is it more about, yeah, just the type of person there, like, because you're describing the type of person versus the type of organization, and we're mostly B2Bers here. Yeah.
It is a single person
Okay.
because the experience is personal. Now, in B2B journey maps, it is common to, for example, have your, I worked with a B2B software company, and the buyer of the software was the VP at a hospital. But the daily users of the software were billing supervisors. And so, depending on the journey that you're mapping, you may have multiple customer personas. And sometimes we illustrate that by like having little face bubbles on different journey steps. If we're looking at like a really wide organizational journey, well, this is where, the VP is participating. This is where the billing supervisor is participating. These are their different goals. So B2B can get pretty complex in the visualization.
Okay. So we have the personas, we have the goals, and
The
we have.
steps, what's happening from the customer's point of view, what's the customer doing, not the company. And don't forget about steps like waiting, right? Is the customer waiting? Is that something that they're doing? Are they talking to colleagues in other companies? Hey, Martha, what vendor do you use for CRM? That may not be a direct interaction with the company, but it's something that the customer is doing as the customer is going to achieve their goal.
Right. I always say no company is an island unto themselves. They exist in a world of companies and competitors and comparables. Okay, so there's the steps. What's four?
Force, thoughts, and emotions. What is the customer thinking and feeling as they go on this journey?
Okay, and five.
And then five is, I call them moments of truth. Some people don't like that name. We can call them critical moments. That what we call them doesn't matter. But what are those moments in the journey that have a disproportionate impact on the customer's experience? So in our B2B software example, for this particular product, because of financial cycles and insurance and everything, updating the system in January was a critical interaction for this customer. And what happened in January had a very big impact on their perception of the software, the product, the company, and the experience that they had with the company. What happened in April, much, much less impactful on the customer experience and therefore their loyalty behaviors.
Right.
So five is those moments of truth, critical moments. Sometimes they're friction points. Sometimes they're really good interactions that you want to capture and make sure you repeat for every customer. But it's those specific moments in the journey that have that disproportionate impact.
Right. So in our world of customer feedback, we call them weighted or highly indexed. But and always pointing out it's not all created equal, right? It's just not. When it comes to the customer experience, there's the big bubbles, the little bubbles. It's all part of the journey. It all impacts each step, it impacts the next step, and yet some things are always going to stand out. Well, let's jump ahead into, because I know we want to get into the freewheeling exercise, et cetera, but maybe before that, we should just talk about what the Dharma method is. Does the Dharma method map to these five?
Those are that's what goes on the map. The Dharma method is the five steps in the journey mapping process. And I think you've got a Lean Six Sigma background too, Martha. Before
Actually,
I
black
got,
belt Six Sigma, but yeah.
hey, before I got into customer experience management as a discipline, I did about 10 years of lean process improvement and then got introduced to Six Sigma. And one of the things that was really easy for people to understand about Six Sigma was the DMAIC process. You're like, oh, okay, I get it now. Define, measure, analyze, improve, control. Well, when I set out learning journey mapping like 6 years ago, it was like the dark arts. Like you had to, join this forum and talk to these people and read, this chapter and these three books and try and put it all together. And what our industry needed was a DMAIC kind of sequence for journey mapping so that we can do it right. There's multiple research reports out there. CXPA did one in 2016, Gartner did one in 2018 or 19, TSIA did one in 2022, and they all show that about half of journey maps fail. They fail to drive any change. They fail to make any impact. They fail to have a positive return on investment. So we needed an easy, repeatable process for creating journey maps that's going to give you something that's going to be valuable to the organization. And that's the DARMA process. DARMA stands for one, define the opportunity. What's the reason that you're creating the journey map in the first place? A is analyze the current state. Let's get everything the organization already knows or think they know about customers and analyze that, put that together. That's going to help us with step three, which is research the customer experience. Analyzing the current state is going to help us develop those research instruments we need to go out and actually interact with customers and learn about their experience. So that's step three, R, research the customer experience. Step four is M, to map the experience. Take your research, analyze it, create the personas based on what emerges, create the maps. You'll probably have more than one map based on the persona, their goal, and the experience. So M is map. And then step five is act on the insights. Because if your journey map doesn't drive change, it's just an art project. You've got this big, beautiful map that doesn't do anything. So A, the final A, you have to act on the insights that you've collected. Use the map, identify opportunities to improve the customer experience, prioritize those opportunities based on effort and impact, and then go do them and track the impact and can, enter that continuous improvement cycle.
So we have a good question from the audience that I think relates to research. How many people for a particular persona should you interview? Would interviewing one individual be enough? I would say no.
No. So it depends on the scope of the journey, whether we're doing a big end-to-end experience map or a smaller phase of the overall journey. So it depends, but typically I interview between 20 and 30 customers. And,
And do you do that by Zoom? Do you do, how do you interview them? Team?
mostly by Zoom. These days, it's one of the few good things about the pandemic was it normalized video meetings like this. So, especially in B2B, it's very, very easy and convenient to interview customers over Zoom. Now, before the pandemic, I had a team of 12 and we flew them all over the country. And they would go to the hospitals and they would sit down with the VPs in their office and do this big in-depth interview. But these days, Zoom, one, saves companies a lot of money on travel, and two, it's a lot easier to recruit customers for a 45-minute Zoom call than an office visit.
Right. Can personas be based on input from employees that work directly with customers? Do you do focus groups with employees, or what do you think?
It's good input. I would get that in the analyze phase, but it's really the qualitative research that's going to build out the personas, because you're hearing from the customers themselves what their needs are, what their goals are, and what they value.
So not the employees interpreting direct feedback.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I like this question. Is there a reason why traveling to an interview might be helpful? So when we think about on site, we generally call them ethnographies, where you're in, at the business. And what do you find? Is it more robust? Is it, I mean, clearly, it saves money to do it by Zoom. Actually, a lot of money, right? But there are some advantages to actually showing up at the company.
Absolutely. Especially if you're doing observations, right? Now, observing software is easy to do over a Zoom,
Sure.
right? But if you're I was talking to a company earlier this year that had showrooms, right? That would be very advantageous to be there in person and walk through the showroom with the customer and understand what they're looking for, why they're going here, why they're going there, why they decide to leave. So yeah, it depends on the type of customers you have, the journey that you're mapping, the type of company that you're in.
It just occurred to me, like showing up at the clients, every client has their suite of conferences that they attend every year, and they're often there because their customers are there, that could be like one big listening post. That would save money. You're not flying into the customer, but you get to have those kind of one-on-ones and just kind of a different way of getting at those one-on-one insights.
Right, absolutely. And in fact, I worked with a client a couple of years ago that had their own conference. And so they had customers coming in to go to the client's conference, and we absolutely leveraged that for in-person interviews and connections with customers.
Great. I like it. I think we should move. I mean, I've got a lot more questions for you about your position on journey mapping software and the future of journey mapping, but we can maybe get to that, later on, or as the roundtable opens up. Did you want to start? Didn't you have a mirror board, an exercise? I thought it might be helpful to jump into that, and get some more participation from the audience, but we're getting great questions coming in. So there's that too. Like Bree
Yeah,
says, is
let's do a little Q&A and wrap up this conversation, and then we can move into aligning journey mapping with company goals, which was the exercise I set up.
So you want me to field some more questions here from that? I like Bree's question. Is 20 to 30 interviews enough, a significant amount, regardless of how many total customers you have? So that's near and dear to my heart. Like, is it what's the science number there? Like, we would say
Yeah,
that's
so
how many customers you have.
I get almost every client I work with, we have a discussion about this because there's typically some stakeholder that says, well, 20 to 30 interviews is not going to be statistically significant. And that idea of statistical significance is when you want to make an observation about a population, right? So if I wanted to say 40% of males over 40 prefer black phone cases, right? There's an observation about a population, and I need statistical significance to be able to make that. And that's where we get into confidence levels. And, I can say with 95% confidence that 40% of males over the age of 40 prefer black phone cases. Okay. That's a lot more quantitative analysis, something like Martha would do. In qualitative, we're looking for something called saturation. We're not looking for statistical significance. We're looking for something called saturation. And saturation is a bit more touchy-feely, but it's when you, as a researcher, you stop hearing anything significantly new. And, your first customer interview, everything is new. After 20 to 30, we've pretty much stopped hearing anything new. I did have one project, end-to-end journey map for a B2C company. We ended up doing 34 interviews. And at that point, the other researcher and I felt like we had hit saturation. We weren't learning anything new. So for a smaller journey, you might get there with fewer interviews. Typically, 20 to 30 is what we do in the bigger journey maps that I've done. Sometimes it goes, 30 to 35. I worked with another company, a bigger consulting firm, on a journey map. We did 49 interviews. I think they had a really good salesperson, sold a lot of interviews. 49 ended up being too much. Like those last 10 interviews, we
Repetitive
weren't
of
learning
what you
anything new.
learned. Right. We work with an ethnographer sometimes who works actually in groups of four. So it's like four. Do I need another four? Do I need another four? And just keeps layering on the four until, to your point, he gets to the point of saturation. Hey, Victoria, did you want to ask your question? Because I'm not familiar with what SIPOC is.
Oh, I know SIPOC. It's a Lean Six Sigma tool. S is suppliers.
Right.
I is
Input.
in inputs. Yeah. P is the process.
Right.
O is the outputs, and C is the customer of that process. So suppliers, inputs, the process, the outputs, and the customers. And that can be useful in the analysis part of Dharma. That can be a tool that we use if we're looking at company processes.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. And did you want to jump into technology, or again, did you want to open up your mirror board, or what do you think, Dave?
I see three more questions here. Jeff says, how do you balance the need for a detailed, comprehensive journey map with the practicality of keeping it actionable and accessible for teams to implement changes effectively? And that may dovetail into the technology question, but the idea is you're going to get tons of really interesting stuff from your research, from the R step in Dharma. But remember, go back to the purpose of the map, why you're creating it, and only put enough on the map so that it is effective at telling that customer's story and driving change. And you can take the rest, you can put it in a supplemental report, you can use it. If you're then taking your map and you're building out journey orchestration or journey analytics or journey management, you can use all that good stuff. But as far as the visualization for the point of communicating insights to drive change, just put enough on there to tell that customer's story, engage your stakeholders, usually your executive team, and get the buy-in for actually taking action. Mandy says, do you ever iterate journey mapping based first on other listening posts and then refine in interviews? We're B2C, so a bit different over here. Yes, absolutely. Journey mapping is not a one and done activity. One of the criticisms of journey mapping is, well, it's just a snapshot in time and it's out of date as soon as you make it. And what I typically say to that is, I've never met a company that can move so quickly that the journey map is out of date before they're able to take action, meaningful action to improve the experience.
Like, is it the kind of thing you might revisit yearly?
It could be.
Quarterly?
Again, I'm always going to go back to the goal of the business.
And did they act?
Yeah,
They
and
absolutely act.
did they act?
Yeah.
Many, when you think about opportunities in the act phase, a lot of times we'll use an impact effort matrix. Impact is what's going to be the magnitude of the impact. How many customers is it going to impact? How big of an improvement is it going to make? And we'll plot that against effort. How hard is it to make the change? And then we'll find some quick wins that are easy, maybe have a little bit of impact. Then there's some big projects that are going to take a little bit longer, but they're going to have a huge impact. So, for example, the residential internet company that we've talked about, they said for those work from homers, they're actually going to go build infrastructure, which is going to be a multi-year project, backup generators and all kinds of stuff that I don't know about. But they're like, we're going to go build infrastructure that's going to allow us to provide a higher level of support for this very profitable customer segment. And then we can make guarantees about uptime and reliability because we've got the infrastructure, and then charge a premium price for that. So that's a multi-year initiative that's going to have a huge impact for that company, but it's going to take a long time to build out. An example of a quick win in the same scenario was, how do we put a express lane in our contact center so that when a work from homer calls, we can immediately identify that they are this very important, highly profitable customer segment and route them to an expedited resolution versus the fixed income segment or somebody who's just watching Netflix. Matt says, do you use quant analysis as a next step after qual to quantify the size of each persona and the customer base, treating them more like customer segments, plus validate and drill down on further insights about pain and love points? Absolutely. We'll consider any quant that exists in the analyze phase, and then that could be and often is an action is, okay, we need to go do a quant study to learn more about this particular segment or this particular customer type.
So your clients are, so the near and dear to my heart are two forms of analysis. One is crosstabs and the other is correlation analysis. And it sounds like your clients are open to that. Yeah, good.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Natasha says, so the visual of the journey map should be a summary succinct for executives and others to understand the main insights, but not a storage of all info and details discovered in the actual journey mapping process. Yes, for the visual, right, that you're using to communicate these insights to the executive team, get buy-in for action, etc. If you were to go build that out in a software platform, then that would be an opportunity to include all of those additional details and insights. And that's where we kind of get into what I think the future of journey mapping will be. I don't know if we want to go there or go to the exercise,
I
but
think we should go to the exercise. You have a cool
okay.
exercise, and I like your mirror board.
All
And
right.
kind of as it's going, a great question about the difference between B2C and B2B. We can get, and you know what? I bet Dave would be willing to hang on a few minutes after for questions. And I always ask people, especially this is the last of our B2B roundtables for the year. So if anybody has ideas for topics they want to present, that could be Matt with Journey Spark. It could be anybody in the audience or who has an idea for somebody who's not in the audience, but who's maybe in their company, who might want to address some nuanced aspect of B2B CX in 2025 and build a roundtable around that. Would love to hear about that. So let's just all plan on hanging on, say, up to 10 minutes afterwards for topic ideas and more Dave Seaton questions. And I did want to make a plug for Dave Seaton's LinkedIn. Maybe Nicole, make sure his LinkedIn and maybe my LinkedIn is in the chat too, so people can link us in and ask questions. Okay. You should all be seeing the mirror board. Yes? I see it.
Please,
Okay. Okay.
please connect on LinkedIn. Don't just follow, connect. I do a monthly LinkedIn live about journey mapping. So connect with me on LinkedIn, and then it's 30 minutes once a month, and we'll cover some journey mapping topic. So the idea of journey mapping for game-changing impact, you have to tie in to what's important for your company. One of the reasons that journey maps fail is that they don't align with the company's strategic plan. So I have become a collector of company goals, and these are, I seeded the board with a few company goals that I have collected over the last several years. And what I'd like for us to do as a group is enter your own customer goals. Now, don't disclose any proprietary or confidential information. Like if there's a financial number in there, you can just put dollar sign X. But let's curate a collection of the actual goals that our companies are working on. What's important to your CEO, your CFO, your COO? And if you haven't used Miro before, I think you can, well,
And
maybe
just grab
not.
a
Yep,
post-it, right?
there is a, over here on the left, looks like a square with a corner turned up. Yeah, you can, people are figuring it out. You can drop sticky
Like this
notes
one,
there.
right? And you may have, I was taken out of Zoom sort of briefly, and you just go through a little sequence and say, yes, I approve of mirror board.
For some of us, the it's getting blocked by corporate firewalls for anybody logged in from work. So unfortunately, I can't see the mirror,
Yeah,
but I
same
can still
here.
hear everybody.
Yeah.
And so for some of us, like I'll just post my responses in chat maybe, and somebody who has access can maybe put them in to represent.
Sure.
Yeah. Same
Yeah,
here. Thank you,
so
Matt. Yes, of course.
Jenny and Claudia, I'm using the Miro app embedded within Zoom, so you shouldn't have to leave Zoom, but it does sound like some
I did. I mean, it was very brief, but it did
right.
sort of take me out and then take me back in.
Okay.
How do we log in? I mean, Claudia says, how do we log in? I hope you can still hear me, Claudia.
Let
I'm
me
blocked by
see.
corporate firewall is blocking that. Okay. So do go ahead and drop your notes in. And Dave, do you want to be the person? Yes, just click join.
Yeah, so I dropped a share link in the chat. So if Miro through Zoom isn't working, maybe that will work as a backup. We have a bunch of
Well, I see a lot of.
activity, a lot of goals popping up.
Yep. Same issue access. Oh. Well, March, if you put I'll do your post-it. If you stick
Yep.
your goal in, I'll start a post-it note for you.
Thanks,
I'm
Martha.
screen.
Yeah, so totally reducing cost to serve is like our number one thing. We have to figure out as a business how to do that. We're in the service industry, and so bringing that cost down is a big thing.
Like that. Bring down costs is huge. Okay. Anybody else want me to drop a note for them?
Yes, I'm going to send you a direct message.
Okay.
All right. I see activity is slowing down.
Same issue.
So I'm making some big orange rectangles. Give me just a second.
Let's see. Direct message.
So our next step is we are going to take all these goal stickies and drop them in one of these four categories that they fit into. Is it a goal related to customers? Is it a goal related to employees? Is it a goal related to the operations of the company? Or is it a specific financial goal? Granted, everything ultimately impacts finances, right? But for example, I will take this end the year with $1 billion in total contracted backlog. I'll drop that over there under financial. That's a very financial goal. Drive business excellence, for example, is an operations goal. Build great teams, that's about employees. Attract and retain a world-class workforce. Customer retention, that's about customers. Simplify processes, there's an operational goal. Customer satisfaction's about customers. So everybody dive in and let's align these goals with one of those four groups.
And do they always align with those four groups, Dave?
Well, I am purporting that they do. I have never seen a company goal that didn't fit into one of those four categories. Now, some people might make a case that innovation or new product design could be separated from operations, and I would not argue with you if you said that. But I tend to think of them in these four categories.
Okay, employees, operations, finance. And one thing I found in using this mirror board is I had it way too high. I was at 135% zoom. So zooming out to 75% is really helpful so that you can actually see the whole board. And then I have a little message up here that says Miro, but I don't know how to really get rid of that. And it's sort of in the way. You.
You can scroll. I'm using a mouse. And so to scroll with a mouse, you right click and drag the canvas. To scroll with a trackpad, I think you use two fingers.
Yeah, that helped because I don't like that the Miro takes up this big bunch of real estate at the top. But this is helpful. Okay. So are people getting these into these buckets?
Yeah, it looks like we are.
Please build great teams. Simplify processes. What about this one? Increase awareness and adoption of a digital product. What is that?
I would say that would be operations.
Okay. Reduce customer churn. Is that fi would you consider? Because some of these overlap. Like to me, that's financial, but it's also customers. It's also arguably operations. So, what do you do with something like that? Reduce customer churn.
Well, everything is ultimately financial,
Right.
right? if the CEO is saying, Dave, our goal this year is to reduce customer churn, I'd put that in customer. But if
Okay.
the CEO is saying, our goal this year is to increase top line revenue to $200 million, I would put that in financial. And one of the ways you might do that is by reducing customer churn.
Okay. And then innovate with high quality. That's in operations.
Yep. And you could make the case that innovation and operation should be separate, and I wouldn't argue with you. But I put that was one of my stickies, and I put that on there intentionally to kind of drive that conversation.
Okay.
Some people look at the world and they say, operations is service and support and customer success, and that's very different from product design and innovating in the market. And it ultimately depends on the company and how what market they're in, what they're doing.
And just to get curious, do you use this Miro board when you're doing a journey map?
We can, in that define phase, to help capture what's important to the company, because, and this is where we're going to come full circle back to Dharma, is what is the driving purpose for doing or for making this investment in a customer journey map. And so some of the opportunity definitions, here's one from a company in the commodities industry, right? So they sell commodities, it was B2B to C. They sell commodities to small businesses who then turn around and sell those commodities to individual consumers. So the small businesses can buy commodities from any number of big companies, right? So this company's journey mapping goal was, how do we improve the experience so that we increase the share of wallet among those existing customers in the commodities market? They're going to buy X amount of the commodity from somebody. How do we make them buy more from us than they're buying today? And that was the goal of the journey map. Another B2B software company, we did a churn analysis. We identified that they had a significant amount of churn due to dissatisfaction with service and support. And so our goal was, how do we reduce the customer ch churn due to the service and support experience? So we mapped the service and support journey, understood what was the reasons where in that journey were customers deciding that they were so frustrated that they were really willing to switch vendors. Another B2B company, they mapped the onboarding journey because they were hearing from customers that so they had several software modules that they sold, right? So customers would implement one module and then they would try and cross-sell them additional modules. And customers were saying, no, the onboarding implementation process was so terrible. We're not buying anything else from you. We're stuck with what we've already bought because we already went through this onboarding process, but we're not buying anything else. So we mapped the onboarding journey to understand how do we make that onboarding journey easier and effortless for customers so that they will buy additional modules and we can unlock cross sells. So understanding your company's goals and your company's strategic plan allows you to position your journey map to get you the insights you need to make better decisions to accomplish these goals. And that's how you show ROI from your journey map.
Since we have everything sort of in its buckets, any last observations you want to make about how this group did its goals board?
This is nothing here was surprising. I would be shocked and surprised if we had a goal that didn't fit into one of these four buckets.
Okay. So that's kind of a good heuristic in terms of when anybody in this group is thinking about the journey map, maybe starting the conversation with, are our goals more employee driven, customer driven, operations driven, or financial driven? And to your point, always recognizing, of course, it's all financial, but sometimes it's more directly financial, as in, this person who says increase share of wallet by 15%. Yeah. And as opposed to indirect, create customers for life. Obviously, that's a huge financial impact. But the first initiative is just getting top share of mind with customers so they think of you as the vendor, the supplier for life, the partner. So there's some more questions coming in. And at this point, I would say, anybody who wants to unmute themselves, go for it. Because Dave is here to answer your questions. I see some questions in the chat, but Dave, you can, however you want to do it, and however the
Yeah.
group wants to do it, belt out your questions, put them in chat, and Dave will read them so we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Whatever the group wants to do.
I see one from Natasha. Do you build out the rough journey map in Miro and then refine journey map in PowerPoint based on insights for executives? What my company does is we have two approaches. One is I have a graphic designer that creates beautiful, impactful maps. The second option is I have a software vendor that I work with, and we can build out the maps in software. Now, they don't look as good in software, but the software then allows them to integrate their listening posts and update the maps based on the customer feedback that's coming in. And so we're able to build a living journey map, if you will, that to some degree updates itself based on customer feedback coming in.
So, like, what about Salesforce? Because we have surveys that integrate right into Salesforce data. Does your software and our clients find that tremendously useful to have that direct hook? Does your software sit inside of Salesforce, or how does that work?
It's a journey mapping software platform.
But can suck information out of a Salesforce?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yep. Or out of Qualtrics or Medallia or Forrester or Boost CX or any of the.
So it's got some APIs built in it.
The company I work with, they link stuff up through the APIs behind the scenes and build data connectors, is what they call them. And so you can hook a particular touch point up to a survey that's going out for that touch point and create a journey map that does.
Hey, I just realized we're at 4 minutes to the hour. I was wondering, why are we getting this? All of these like happy holidays. Well, it's because we're at the hour point. Obviously there's a lot to say here, and why don't I just give you a round of applause for joining today. We had well over 70 people in this round table. So hot topic, great speaker. Thank you, Dave, for joining us. And we'll just hang on for another few minutes. Like I say, I'm interested in topics and speakers and any questions you have for me, and Dave's, I think, happy to answer any other specific questions you have. And please, let's link in. LinkedIn is always a good way to stay in touch. And happy, truly happy holidays. Thank you all for joining us in this last one of the year. And most of you probably have to go, but anyone who wants to stay on, Please do.
Yeah. Real quick, I saw a comment from Donna saying, "Can I show a beautiful map?" And while all of my I'm looking for it now because I know people have to go. While all of my real maps are proprietary for my customers, I do have a demo map that looks like that. So this is a pretend company, Gold Rush AI. This is the buying journey for one of their segments, solopreneurs. It's based on a real experience with a real company, but it is fictionalized as a demo. So this is what it looks like. You can see top left, we've got the customer persona. To the right of that is the customer goal. Across the middle of the map is the actions that and the intermediate objectives that the customer has. Then we have the thoughts and emotions on that line going through the middle. You can see a moment of truth in the orange diamond there. Something happens there in that, excuse me, in that moment that splits the journey either to a positive experience where Driven David buys this software or a negative experience where he cancels his free trial and looks for other options.
And this relates to a question that came in through the chat. You would have one of these for each of these different personas.
It again depends on the story we're telling. Sometimes you can put multiple personas on one map and show how the journey changes for, one versus the other. Sometimes the journey's so different that you need multiple maps, one for each persona.
Gotcha. Okay.
Are we allowed to make suggestions?
Sure.
Well, Dave, I just wanted to I wanted to address one of the comments that came up. I've had some success using, I think it was Jean Bliss in her book, talked about creating a customer room. And so one of the things that I've done with my mural maps prior to creating a journey map, but taking the mural board map, I've actually printed them out in like 15 foot long, and we created a customer room and put the map up on the wall. But the cool thing was is we had Post-its and pens in there, and we encouraged employees to visit it daily, weekly, whenever there was an issue. And so the map, it came to life. It wasn't just wall art. And the CX team would go in on a weekly basis and collect the updated Post-its and everything. It's just a thought, but it's like whatever. A couple $100 to print a 15, a 5 by 15 foot map out, but it keeps it
Yeah.
alive and it just keeps it, it keeps it ongoing.
I love that, Greg. And there's a discussion in the CXPA forums right now about customer rooms. And when I was an employee years and years ago, we created a virtual customer room because our company had multiple sites and a large virtual workforce. So we had our journey maps and our personas and our metrics and dashboards and everything online in a so-called virtual customer room. And
Yep, great idea.
and
Do that as
I
well.
love that idea. I love customer rooms.
Yeah, I'll shut up, but I just like it because also too, it was interesting when board members would visit, they would come in and they would say, what's this? What's going on here? And the company took great pride in explaining, we listen to our customers, we're continually updating the experience on the journey and the journey map and that type of thing. So just an idea.
Well, what
I
I
love it.
like is just the employee involvement with it. I think that's huge, because the employees, as all the Gallup research says, are half the customer experience, right? Like by definition. And so getting their input and getting them excited about the journey map and not just something that's served to them seems like kind of the hip way to go. Yeah. Hey, Greg, what company are you with?
Sorry, I have a consulting practice called the Pocket CMO. I'm a fractional, basically a fractional CXO, CMO. I'm more at the strategic level rather than the management level. But one of the comments that I made when I summarize what I do, one of the comments I made on the mural board is, you have a differentiated value proposition, and it implies an experience. So my thing is, as a marketer, you go to great lengths to, you know, define this differentiated value proposition. Are you delivering the experience that the DVP implies? So that's what I do.
Cool. I like it. Nicole says, here's the discussion. Oh, the
Oh, great.
forum that he's
Yeah.
mentioning. Terry has a question. Terry, are you still with us? Terry is not still with us. Thinking about creating a virtual customer room since we have coworkers. All over.
Yep, we get
Good.
some questions about software. This is the same journey map in software. And so you can tell immediately that the graphic designed journey map is much more visually appealing and much more likely to draw in somebody on the executive team who says, wait, what is this thing I'm looking at? Tell me about this. The software, this line here, this dashed line, well, I don't know if you can see my cursor or not, but if you're looking at the line mapping emotions, you see at the bottom there's a dashed line there that's just at zero all the way across. That is where you can hook in your voice of the customer platform and have the solid line be what you discovered in your journey mapping process, and the dashed line your real-time view based on the listening that's coming in. The other nice thing about software is you can link these journey maps, and that's where I think we begin to get into the future of journey mapping. Is instead of a static, two-dimensional, one-page map, building out multi-dimensional journey models is what I'm currently calling them. It's kind of like a painting versus a sculpture. And as journeys get more complex, and we have the software and the ability to create those multi-dimensional models, I think that's what the future of journey mapping will be.
Sure, it could even be four-dimensional because time becomes part of that, becomes one of the dimensions, right? So it can become 4D chess, and yet you don't want it so complicated that the employees don't understand what the heck you're doing. I think we should appreciate everybody's time since now we're 6 minutes over the hour. And Dave, maybe you'd come back sometime in 2025 and we could specifically talk about technology in the future of journey mapping. I think that's its own sort of topic. And with that, I think we should close out the meeting. Thank you again, Dave. This is really helpful. And Dave, I'll shoot you an email as soon as we're done. And don't forget to link us in. And happy holidays to everyone. Bye for
Hey,
now.
buddy. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, and thank you so much, Dave. Bye.
Bye, bye, everyone.